It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you grow your e-commerce business faster and more efficiently by cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and guidance from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello, Master Plan World. Welcome to our latest podcast. It's a pleasure to have you all listening. And if you're listening as this one goes live, I hope Christmas is going really well. I'm Chloe Thomas. I'm the creator of the E-commerce Master Plan. I'm an author, speaker, and advisor, and I focus on e-commerce business strategy and marketing. Now, last episode, we caught up with Justin Cook from Empire Flippers and dived into the market for buying and selling e-commerce businesses. So something a little bit different last time, as well as some very interesting buyer personas. If you want to have a listen to that one, then do, but don't do it now because now you're listening to this one. But you can also join the chat about that and everything else e-commerce in our Facebook group. You'll find that via ecommercemasterplan.com/Facebook or go onto Facebook and search for E-commerce Masterplan World. Enough of that though, let me introduce you to today's special guests because we've got two of them on today. We've got Jeff Hunt and Henry Waddilove, who are the co-founders behind Burlingham London Watches, a British watch company selling both men's and ladies' watches inspired by British heritage. They launched in August 2016 and have sold hundreds of units in their first year. Hello guys, how are you doing?
Hello. Hello everyone.
Are you having a good day today?
Yeah. Nice and busy, which is always good.
Excellent. Well, look, I've just given the listeners a super quick overview of you guys and your business, like ridiculously quick. So how did you get started off in e-commerce?
So we both used the Regus business lounges. So we kept bumping into each other, having like running our own businesses before this. And I was running a wood-fired pizza business at the time. So going around catering at like wood-fired, at like weddings and private parties, et cetera, et cetera. And it was really good, but really like the idea of an e-commerce business whereby you could set up a product and just retail the one commodity as opposed to all of these like tangibles and bits that get changed and twisted week on week. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where I was. And then Henry was running an art consultancy business, which had some sort of like online sales as well. So I think we kind of amalgamated the two and decided as soon as we both loved watches and ended up talking about watches for hours on end, long before Burlingham was even a thing, we decided to kind of pool resources and throw everything into starting a watch company.
Okay, so from the point where the two of you decided, right, let's do this, how long did it take you to get to your e-commerce website being a reality?
We probably first started talking about it in the earlier stages, probably the beginning Q1 of 2015.
Wow, so it's quite a while.
It was. And then we both had our businesses and other commitments. And I think it was probably about 4 to 6 months before we properly jumped in with both feet. Mm-hmm. So then let's call that September, October time 2015. And then from there, it just takes quite a while because we were working with our designers to come up with the design of the watch. Then we were obviously having to talk and source out manufacturers and then the whole process of that. And then we got the watches back and we kind of really believe in like design thinking. So we got those watches and then we went and spoke to hundreds of people and got all of that feedback. And then by the time we fed that back to the designers and tweaked it and it went back to the manufacturers, and it was quite a lengthy process. But I'm really glad we did it because we made quite a few tweaks along the way that have made the product quite a bit better, hopefully.
So it's all about so more of the delay was about making sure you had the feedback on the product before you started selling it, rather than it being about I've got too many pizzas to shift and too much art to sell.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool. Well, look, let's move into where the business is at the moment. So you're in the UK clearly, but where are you selling those watches to at the moment?
As you said, we're based in the UK, in London. We worked hard from sort of day one, from our initial thoughts until now, that we wanted to be able to easily sell globally. One of the fantastic things with e-commerce is it allows that to happen fairly easily. And obviously the fantastic bit with a watch as well is that with our packaging, it's secure and safe, so it can quite easily float around the world to new buyers and new risks. So, you know, we're very lucky or worked hard, I guess, as well as luck, that within the first month of us selling, we actually had sales as far away as Australia, Malaysia. And to this day, we're getting regular organic sales from Europe. For some reason, especially Germany, which sort of bucks the trend as to what various advisors and people had said to us. So you know, I think one of the fantastic things with e-commerce and our brand is that, you know, a major focus for us is global sales. So yeah,
I guess that's gone into the branding, hasn't it?
Very much so. One of them, we work very closely with our designers, and one of the, you know, the criteria that we sort of both came up with along the way is it's got to be a British brand. It's got to feel British, look British, and be British. And we work hard to ensure that. And you know, there are certain overseas countries that that the British brand is a very strong selling point. There are also places where it's not so popular. So it's ensuring our focus on that. We actually work quite closely with the DIT, which is the Department of International Trade, with the UK government, who are a fantastic source for us of knowledge and information about exporting overseas and about preparing the business and ourselves for overseas distribution. So we can't rate them highly enough. They're fantastic.
Yeah, I've done a bit of work for them in the past, and they are a great organisation. Really focused. I often think they're really focused because they're the bit of the government that makes a profit.
You know,
so it's like, yeah, it's really, really quite cut and dried what they need to do. The product is a watch or watches of your own design, isn't it? And we're talking men's and women's. Have you got many SKUs on the go?
Yeah, so when we were launching, we knew we wanted to launch with one range of watches, which would be unisex. So mm-hmm. we've kind of tailored the size, so it's kind of that really nice in-between size. And so more unisex than males and women specifically, although we've actually sold probably slightly more male watches than female watches, but it's not too far off 50-50, which is really exciting. And then, so we have the one range of 8 different SKUs at the moment.
So the products are all unisex, but you're selling more to women than men. Is that right around?
Oh, no, sorry, the other way. I think we've sold a few more to men, but it's not massively skewed. So that's quite nice.
So got you. So it's they are unisex, but we're selling slightly more to men than to women, but it's all the same product.
Yeah, and only slightly more to men. It's not massively biased one way or the other.
Well, that makes stock management considerably easier, doesn't it, if you've only got 8 watches rather than 16?
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, also, like, hopefully this runs through our branding, but we wanted to set the brand up kind of around equality, gender neutrality, globalism, if you like. So it just seemed to tick those boxes as well. Like, we're working with the charity Cool Earth, so mm-hmm. for every watch that's purchased, a donation's made that saves 200 square meters of rainforest by investing in, like, the local indigenous people. They call the rainforest home, and there's that unisex kind of feel worked really well with that, because the charity works really well in, like, empowering women and kind of bridging the lack of equality at times in some places. So it just kind of resonated across all touch points.
Cool. And I'm always interested when an e-commerce business is so closely aligned to a charity, and it's kind of front and center. It's very clear on the website. Is it a charity you already knew about, or did you know the values of the business? You went, let's find a charity with similar values. Was it a price point thing? You know, what's the thing we could afford to do within the margin? Was it part of the plan right from the beginning?
Yeah. I think it's they're all really, really, really good questions. So we knew we wanted to work with a charity. And I'm quite keen on effective altruism. I think all charities are fantastic and they all do a lot of great work. But I think some are quite efficient and effective in their positive social,
impact?
Impact, that's the one. So some do kind of get more impact per pound spent. So we knew that was like one of the criteria we really wanted to hit. Mm-hmm. And we also wanted it to resonate with the brand. So we didn't want something that was, too distant from the product and the watch and where we're at. We wanted something that kind of ran in sync with everything else. Now, a couple of years before that, Henry had done the Mongol Rally mm-hmm. with the Adventurists, so driving from like here over to Mongolia in a car worth a grand. And that charity is quite or partnered with Cool Earth. So that's kind of the loose route to finding Cool Earth. And like you said, with regards to demographics, they've got quite a similar profile of demographic profile to we have. So it just seemed to tick all of the boxes. And that's why we decided upon them.
Okay, cool. And what platform are you selling on?
So we find one of the most powerful tools we have in our box is Shopify. It's fantastic. I'm sure most of your listeners either use it or know of it. But for us, it works. It sort of ticks all of our boxes. It's fantastic. So we run our own store through Shopify. We're also on various online marketplaces as well. We're quite, I don't know the right word, quite picky, I suppose, about who we work with, and who we partner with. You know, a very important part of our business is the brand strength and the brand identity. So we've got to make sure that's kept. So, the UK listeners will probably know Not on the High Street. Maybe everyone will, but they're a very strong partner of ours, and they allow that brand identity and also us to be alongside some other fantastic brands. So
did any other marketplaces make the grade?
I mean, we're talking to a few others at the moment. We're on Newegg, which mm-hmm. is an American distributor, mainly in tech, actually, but they're moving across to sort of other areas. And along with the DIT, sort of, we're working closely with them to be one of the leading forces in that. We recently were a part of a campaign with Newegg and the British government, all about British brands in America. So they're a fantastic platform. They offer great support, both online, and actually we've been to a few events that they've put on helping to explain the process. So Newegg, Not on the High Street, and Shopify are our main ones. We're also in Stumper and Fielding, which is a physical store in Portobello Road in Notting Hill. And we're excited to announce that we're also in Covent Garden, which is a very recent happening, which is perfect just in time for Christmas. So, yes, very exciting, both online and offline. That's sort of our current platforms at the moment.
See, I find that really fascinating, not least because I've just launched a book called B2B e-commerce, which, you know, you're not, I'm guessing you're not supplying the retailers via the website yet, but I find it really fascinating that there's an awful lot of people who have designed a product who are now out there wholesaling to retailers as well as selling it online themselves. So was getting stocked in shops always part of your plan, or is it something that they approached you and you went, oh, that's a nice idea?
Yeah, so I think at the moment we're not looking at massive like wholesale distribution or mass market mm-hmm. distribution. What we wanted, though, was I think we've got the most fantastic product. And when people handle it, that's when they can really experience it. So what we want to do is we wanted one key London kind of location whereby if you're in and around the London area, you can go to the store, you can kind of try the watch on, you can see it in person, you can see it glinting and like the geoche pattern around the edge. And we really wanted that. So I think going forwards, we'd like to find kind of really nice key locations, maybe one in Edinburgh, Manchester, you know, the Bristol, like the bigger hubs around the UK where people can go and experience the watches. Mm-hmm. And then maybe ultimately we will branch more into other retailers. But I think at the moment it's more just to kind of showcase the quality.
Yeah. So when someone comes on the site and goes, can I have a look at it somewhere? You can quite quickly deal with that question in a very positive way.
Exactly that. And I think another reason for the stores, and again, being fairly selective on the stores that we work with, is that brand association. You know, who else is in the store? What's the store brand and feel themselves? And how does that sit with us? Mm. And it just helps bring the brand to life offline as well as just online.
Cool. I'm going to take a step back to your Shopify site. And I should say, for anyone who's listening who hasn't yet bought their Shopify site and has it on the plan, you can get a very nice little discount on that if you go to ecommercemasterplan.com/Shopify. But as to your Shopify site, I haven't yet met anyone who has a Shopify site who doesn't have something bolted into it. So what are the key widgets and plugins that you rely on day to day?
There are so many, and I think that's one of the fantastic things with Shopify is that there are some fantastic applications to use with it and bolt on.
What would your say your top one or two be?
Goodness, okay. We've got one called Beating, which is a fantastic app which helps automate emails for cart abandonment, which obviously is an issue with e-commerce stores. So it's fantastic with that, and it also is great at email remarketing people who have bought from us before, and it recognizes their details. So for us is very strong, and it's a fantastic automation process for us, which I think the apps are a key for streamlining and automating the process. I think another one, so our delivery partner is My Hermes, and they have a great app which syncs with Shopify and their delivery system, which again helps to automate the migration of the customer details and address across the delivery system. So with a click of the button, the delivery is fulfilled. So nice and easy, exactly what people should expect from an e-commerce store. I think very quickly, a couple more is Google Shopping for us is fantastic. We're not currently using Google Shopping, but when we were and when we will again, it's a great app to sync up our products with Google Shopping automatically, so we don't have to spend time filling in the fields we've already filled.
Now, out of interest, you've stopped using Google Shopping at the moment, and just so everyone knows, we're recording this in August. Is that a seasonality thing rather than anything else?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a mix. I think, you know, we're still a very young business, so we're trying lots of different avenues. And, you know, we tried Google Shopping quite early on and had some success. You know, as you say, it's fairly seasonal, so we're giving a bit of rest at the moment whilst we try new areas and new ways of eyes on site and eyes on product. But it's something definitely we would use again. You know, it's fundamental in the toolkit of a successful e-commerce business.
Cool. And you mentioned that you're selling on a couple of marketplaces already. Are you using anything that ties together all those the activity between your marketplace and your Shopify site? You know, an order management system, a listing system, or a stock organization system, or are you doing them managing them each individually at this point?
So be completely honest, we're not at the moment. We've had sort of conversations around that. Shopify do a good job of a stock management inventory, and also we do manage that independently from each avenue, and also we have a sort of a glorified Excel document, I suppose, where we can keep tabs of everything. So it's something we're looking to sort of grow into over the coming months.
It's one of those things which, if you've only got 8 SKUs and you've only got 3 outlets, I suppose, plus the 2 shops, so you've got 5 outlets and you've got 8 SKUs, it's quite easy to manage each of those individually. So it's not a problem that necessarily needs solving right at the beginning, I suppose,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, exactly that. It's something that we want to tick off and get sorted. But you know, as I'm sure everyone listening will understand, there are only so many places your head and budget can go to. So it's something probably, but this is recorded in August. By Christmas, we probably would have something in place.
Okay, cool. And team-wise, there's obviously the two of you. I guess the first question is, are you both now full-time on this, or are you still working in art and pizzas?
We definitely dedicate a lot of time to this. We still both have those two plodding along in the background, but yeah, largely full-time on this.
Cool. And do you have anyone else working for you in the business? Is there anything you've chosen to outsource or hire in?
Yeah. So we still do quite a lot of that ourselves. And I knew, like, when we set up, probably like a lot of people going into e-commerce businesses, we wanted it to kind of streamline it and automate it as much as possible. I mean, we'd both read Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week and automation and whatnot. So I think that's something that we're maybe kind of grow more towards or transition more towards. So at the moment we've outsourced our design. So we have an external design team, which we work quite closely with. And I guess the first thing we outsourced, though, was social media. But we never seemed to get that quite right with external people. We felt like we lost something like the brand control, quality, consistency. So we've actually brought that back in-house, and we're doing that again. that's something we might look to outsource again going forwards.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's not worth the time and effort of proofreading every tweet and every Instagram post. But yeah, it's so important every single one's on brand.
Exactly. And then lastly, I know we've discussed it already, but with regards to outsourcing, like going slightly more into bricks and mortar as discussed, so kind of almost outsourcing some of the selling duties onto others.
Yeah, I like that way of thinking about it too. They're not just a wholesale customer, they are someone we've outsourced the physical side of things to.
Exactly. And I think the people that we're working with so far, like Covent Garden and Notting Hill, the Stumpham Field and on Portobello Road, like we work really closely with them. And like anything in business, like things work well when both parties are happy.
Yeah.
So we try and make sure that they're really happy to stock us and we're kind of helping them as much as possible. And likewise, I think therefore they feel better about us. And it's kind of quite a, I don't want to say an easy sell for them, but you know, that they have belief in the brand and hopefully ourselves. So,
You know, looking at your website, the stockist link is really prominent. Mm. You know, a lot of people would kind of hide that somewhere, but it you know, looking at the website, it's like, oh, they really care about their stockist because that link is right there in the header if someone actually wants to go and see the physical reality.
Yeah. I think it's twofold. I think firstly, as discussed before, it's a really great opportunity for people to go and see the watch,
mm-hmm.
or the watches, sorry. And but secondly, like we're looking at when we're starting up, like as a new business, what are the biggest, like not risks, but what could be the barriers to sale? And there are so many kind of various e-commerce kind of companies and platforms and websites popping up all over the place at the moment. So we thought by having some key retailers, which are kind of consistent and safe and they've been around for a while and desirable, it almost de-risks the brand for people purchasing, I guess.
Yeah, I always think there's an element of trust there because there's somebody, a very cool looking store, want to stock this product, so the product definitely exists, you know. It's kind of like that extra little bit of reinforcement to have the physical side of things.
Yeah, exactly that. So, couldn't agree more.
Cool. And on the trust side of things, you have some pretty impressive PR on the site as well. You know, places that you've been featured are ones that I know many of our listeners would love to get into, some of the really big names. Is that something you've done yourselves, or, you know, or you do you have any, and if so, do you have any kind of tips for those listening on how to get into the big name press outlets?
Yeah. I think we're very fortuitous. I think the first piece of PR like that we got was from Men's Health. And
nice.
They contacted us. They'd seen our website. They really liked the brand. They liked what we stood for. They loved the watches, the charitable aspect. And they got in contact and it was quite organic, actually. So I think we got really lucky. And then from that, I think they made like Harper's Bazaar and Esquire, etc., might have seen us in that one, and it kind of took off from there.
There'll be everyone out there will be going, "Damn you!" or words much harsher than that. That's not fair.
Oh gosh! Well,
but it's kind of, I would say it's one of those pieces of luck that you make for yourself by having the right look, the right brand feel, the right product, the right ethical side to the business, and putting that whole package out there so people can see it. So. So yes, lucky, but I think there was a lot of work that went into creating that luck.
And I think we got really lucky because we've been contacted by other people as well, but for some of them, like the costs are just so exorbitant. Like some of the costs of being featured in some of these things are just ridiculous. So we've also turned down quite a few offers as well, just while we manage budget and allocate funds where they're most needed.
Oh, and that's the game, isn't it? Yeah. Managing time, managing budget, endlessly. So, guys, before we go on to the top tips, what do you think is the most awesome thing about your business right now?
Goodness, good question. It's a very exciting time. You're being such a young business with some great potential. I would say exporting, I think, is massively exciting for us. We're talking to some fantastic distributors and companies and people overseas. So hopefully that will help spread the brand, which is one of the obviously the fundamentals when we started the brand was to do. I think for us, as we sort of touched on just now, is media coverage. You know, we've had Men's Health, Esquire and Harper's Bazaar, the main ones, as well as blogger influencers and some slightly smaller magazines, which are all fantastic. So more of them and more frequent. And probably most excitingly is with some in some very initial conversations with some great people who may look to be ambassadors of Burlingham, which is something we want to push. So that probably hopefully answers your question on that.
Oh, definitely. That sounds pretty awesome, quite frankly. okay. I think it. Oh, a very quick question. Where do you have your watches made? Which country?
We have them made in China. So when we were setting up, we looked at various places where we could have them manufactured, and it just seemed to have the best kind of cost benefit. The cost of having them made in Switzerland is astronomical. So if we wanted to keep a competitive price point for our customers, that kind of went out of the equation slightly. And we've structured it so we actually have our watches made across four different manufacturers to ensure kind of quality control. So like one watch will kind of start it off and make one area, or one company will, sorry, start it off and make one part of it. Then they move it onto the second factory. So that's where the first point of quality control happens. Then they do their bit, and then onto the third one, and then the fourth one. So therefore you've got kind of four points where that quality control is being assessed. Therefore,
Move. But the reason I asked was primarily because obviously, you know, if you're big on the exporting, the good thing about that is you're buying your product in American dollars. And if you're selling products in American dollars as well, then it becomes much less of an issue what happens with exchange rates than if you're buying in American dollars and you're only selling in British pounds, for example.
No, exactly. That definitely kind of mitigates some of the exchange rate risks.
Which are always good mitigating in this day and age.
Oh my gosh, yeah, because I know when we... Yeah, because I mean, the way the pound's gone recently.
Again, there's a lot of people listening who are quite jealous of you.
Yes, nodding their heads, I'm sure. I mean, still, like, a lot of our sales actually, although we have sold abroad, like, the majority probably are still in the UK. Or not the majority, but like a definite percentage of them are still very much within the UK. So we are still earning in sterling. So purchasing in dollars has become something that we might have to look at going forwards.
Okay, well, let's now move on to the top tips round. Now, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. First up then, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend? And also, who's going to answer this one? That's the other question.
Gosh, that's a good question. I'll field this one, if you like.
Yeah, Jeff is a real flies a flag for business books. He reads a lot of them, and I should do more of it.
So Jeff, what's your recommendation?
Gosh, it's a really good question. I guess one that probably lots of people have read and it's probably been mentioned numerous times before, but The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. I think we've definitely kept that kind of front of mind while starting up Burlingham and running it, kind of like, you know, testing, iterating, not making an assumptions, keeping it all quite streamlined, kind of cutting down costs where possibly just to, So I think that probably would be the one book if you are setting up. If you haven't read it, would be a really great book.
Excellent.
And then if I can be really sneaking a second one.
You can sneak in a second one.
I think as well, like with the e-commerce business, you just got to find that little niche and kind of find something different. And then a lot of the work's done for you. So if you've got something that's truly remarkable, if you like, then people will help do the marketing for you. So any of the books like, you know, Start With Why by Simon Sinek, or Putting the Customers First, or, you know, Purple Cow, like anything along those lines, just they've really helped shape Burlingham as well. So so two-pronged approach, like that kind of lean methodology with, you know, hopefully making something that people want.
Excellent. Okay, the traffic top tip next then. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves? And who's answering this one?
This would be me, Henry. Cool. I think this answer would have been different a few weeks ago, but we've recently launched a new blog series all about how influential people value their time. And organically, it's getting us some good eyes on site within our target market. I think it just shows sort of how we've grown as a business within a year, really understanding the target market and what they enjoy and what they want to share with their peers. So for us, it's blogging at the moment.
Very cool. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
So there's two. The first one is very, very basic in terms of everyone will probably have it. But it's actually WhatsApp, WhatsApp for desktop. So if Jeff and myself are working remotely, we can put the phones down, not get distracted by notifications, but still easily instant message each other and share photos and documents on WhatsApp desktop. So that would be the top one, closely followed by Trello, which is fantastic for organizing who does what when.
Excellent. And then last but not least, the startup top tip. If you met someone this weekend who's thinking of starting an e-commerce business, what would be your first tip for them?
So I guess we're quite product focused ourselves. I think if that's the sort of e-commerce business you're going into, just find a niche, find a product that will find an area where there's a gap or kind of room for improvement, and just really make sure you've got the product first and foremost. And just kind of then once you've kind of found that space, test it and speak to people. Don't be afraid to ask people for help or their opinion. And because we know, like, both speaking to umpteen people, like, our original plans like changed 5, 6, 10 times over as we kind of spoke to people and we find it. So yeah, just you know, A, find that gap, and then B, talk to people and, you know, make it better and kind of take it from there, I'd say.
Excellent. Well, Masterplan World, you can find all those top tips and links to everything else we've been chatting about in today's episode by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, where you'll see a link to this show. Before we say goodbye, guys, would you like to let listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media, please?
Definitely. So our website is burlinghamlondon.com. And the social media, Instagram is Burlingham_watches, Facebook, Burlingham London, Twitter, Burlingham_LDN, and Pinterest, Burlingham-London. We'd like to offer a 25% discount to your listeners, Chloe, using Masterplan25 on our website, burlinghamlondon.com, to try out our watches and hopefully help spread the word.
Oh, thank you very much. That's awesome.
No problem at all.
Marvellous. Well, we'll add links to all of that and everything else we talked about today in the show notes. Masterplan World, you can find those at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, or just go to the website, click on the podcast tab, or use the search box. Thank you both for being on the E-commerce Masterplan podcast today. You shared an awful lot of really interesting ideas and ways of going about starting a new business and building it. It's been brilliant. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you. It's been great speaking.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chloe. Appreciate it.
Well, what a fascinating insight from the guys there on what it took to get set up and running that first year, and the impact that their focus on making sure they had the product right, you know, all that checking, getting feedback before they even went live, together with the dividends it's paid of getting their brand absolutely spot on and the PR that's generated for them. A lot to learn from that session. If you've got any questions about it or comments, then join the chat in our Facebook group at ecommercemasterplan.com/Facebook. It's called the E-commerce Masterplan World Facebook group, so it's very easy to find. Earlier this year, we published my brand new book, B2B E-commerce Masterplan. I mentioned it earlier in the show, and you can get the first chapter completely for free at ecommercemasterplan.com/B2B. So head over there if you're in that B2B space and you want to understand more about growing your sales in the B2B space using e-commerce. For now, though, have a great week and keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com.